The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society. The Korea Society, in 2007, celebrating 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org.
Annyeonghaseyo. Welcome to some more Korean tales. Let's start with a favorite story that comes from Korean history, the story of Princess Pyeong-eong and Ondal. Long ago in the old kingdom of Koguryo, there was a princess known for her tears. As a baby, she cried and cried, and people tried to help her. When she grew a little older, she still cried and cried, and people tried to be patient. But when she grew yet older and still wept, the sound became a nuisance. As the tears of Princess Pyeong-eong echoed through palace halls, her mother, the queen, tried to calm her, but could not. Her father, the king, grew daily more annoyed. "Stop!" he ordered at last, but she did not. "Stop right now!" he commanded. But the tears still fell. Finally, in a great anger, he shouted, "If you do not stop weeping, you will marry Ondal the fool." Now this was a threat indeed. For Ondal was a beggar. He was ugly. He roamed the streets in rags, selling wood and hunting scraps to feed his blind mother. He was so foolish, people said, that when children teased him, he didn't even fight back. He just smiled and walked on. Yet even though the king threatened time and again to marry his daughter to this fool, her tears kept flowing. And then at last, her years outgrew her tears. The princess blossomed into a thoughtful and lovely young woman, as sweet as a melon, as pretty as a peach. Her parents proudly searched the kingdom for the best bridegroom. Soon, with a smile, her father told her, "We have found a fine husband for you, from a good family. He is a skilled horseman and a learned scholar." "But father," said the princess, looking confused, "you long ago decided who I would marry."
"I did no such thing," said the king.
"Yes, father. You told me many times that my husband would be Ondal the fool," the princess replied.
"You silly girl," said the king. "I spoke only to stop your tears. A princess can never marry a beggar."
"But a king can never take back his words," she said. "If I do not marry Ondal, people will call you a liar."
"Stop! Stop this nonsense!" thundered the king.
But his daughter quietly insisted until he could listen no more. In a rage, he sent her away, shouting,
"Leave then! Go marry your fool!"
While her mother wept, the princess gathered her jewels and left the palace. As the sun set, her footsteps led her first to the old shack where Ondal and his mother lived, and then on to a hill where he still gathered twigs. In the dark, the princess walked toward him, her silk gown sweeping the earth, her wide sleeves like dragonfly wings, her eyes glowing pearl-like. Ondal was surprised and scared.
"Who are you?" he asked.
"I am a princess come to marry you."
"Oh, no," he cried. "No noble woman would come here alone at night. You are a ghost, a spirit. Go away, go."
And terrified, he raced back to his hut and shut his door tight against this evil of the night. The princess followed and sat waiting outside. At dawn, he opened the door slowly
and found her huddled there. "Who are you?" he asked again, and she told him. "Oh, please forgive me," he said, "but now you must go. You cannot stay here in my poor home." "I must and I will," she insisted. Thus, soon after, the two bowed thrice to each other, and with the simplest of ceremonies, the princess married the beggar. From that day on, she lived in the hut helping. Her soft fingers now stitched rough cloth. Her royal tongue tasted only scraps of food. And she saw in her husband not an ugly fool, but a man with kind eyes, a good heart, and a clear mind. So one day, with her jewels, she bought a horse, a sword, a bow, and several books printed from rare woodblocks. These she gave to Ondal, saying, "My husband, you can do great things, but you must begin to study. You are starting later than the others, so you must work even harder, and I will help." Thus, day after day, under the sun, he rode swiftly upon his horse, perfecting the skills of a warrior. And night after night, under a pine oil light, he slowly learned to read. He worked hard. It was often very difficult. He grew discouraged. But the princess urged him on. She inspired him when he was ready to give up. After many, many months of effort, she gazed with pride upon her husband, now a brave warrior and a man of learning. Then one night she said, "The great hunt at Nong Nong comes soon, on the third day of the third moon. You must go hunt with the warriors of Koguryo, then offer wild boar and deer to the mountains, the rivers there." And so he went, hunting with such courage and skill that the king himself watched, most impressed. And in the twilight, he bowed before the king, who praised him and asked his name. "Ondal, sir." "The fool?" said the king, and was well pleased to know how clever his daughter had been. There was a great reunion at the palace, and Ondal became a general ready to defend his land. Many times he led his soldiers as they charged, like angry waves against those who invaded Koguryo. And due to his great success in battle, he was promoted higher and higher, and then to one of the highest palace ranks. Now, as a much honored officer, he offered to go and reclaim land north of the Han River, which had been seized by neighboring Shilla Kingdom. The king gave his blessing, the princess gave her love, and the general set out. At Achasong, a fort near present-day Seoul, he fought bravely, like a tiger, inspiring all. But he was only human, and an arrow suddenly pierced his chest. He fell from his horse, his blood fell on the ground. He called faintly for the princess and died, they say, with her name upon his lips. Then his body was placed sadly in a coffin to be taken to the capital. But when the soldiers tried to lift it, the coffin stayed, as if rooted. The strongest men strained and struggled, but it did not move. So the princess was told, and she came swiftly. She threw herself on the coffin and wept greater tears than ever she had as a child. "Come, come, my brave and beloved husband," she cried. "Come home and rest. Truly, you have earned the peace you now shall have." At once, the coffin seemed lighter, and it was buried then with great ceremony and respect. From that day on, this true tale of Ondal and the princess has been told and retold, for it proves that love can reach across great differences, and that wisdom and courage can flourish in huts as well as in royal halls. Our next tale includes a few problems to solve. And so to warm you up, here are some Korean riddles. Try to guess each answer before I say it. It stands still, but you cannot catch it.
a shadow. It flies but has no wings. Smoke. You close your eyes, but still you see it. A dream. It is like a cow, but has no horns. A calf. Others use it more than I do, but it belongs to me. A name. It is round, silver, and floats in the river. The moon's shadow. Good work. Now, enjoy our story, Abandoning the Old Ones. Once, in long ago Korea, it was the custom to leave the old on a mountain to die. When an elder's hair turned as white as onion roots, he or she was carried up the mountain and abandoned. No one knew when this custom began. No one liked it, but all obeyed. All except one young man. For as he carried his father up the mountain, his footsteps slowed. His heart grew weary, remembering the many years that his father had taught and loved him so. And as he was about to leave his father, he saw crows circling, waiting for a body. All of a sudden he decided, "No, I won't let my father just die like this. No, I won't." So he hid on the mountain until it was dark, then secretly brought his father back to their home. All night he dug and dug, carving a small room out of the earth. There he hid his father and cared for him. Soon after that, a messenger from the Emperor of China appeared in the king's court. "I have brought three riddles," he said. "If you solve them all, we will leave you in peace." And then he held out a square made from wood, saying, "Tell me which side of the square comes from the higher part of the tree." The king gathered all of his advisers, who had not one white hair, one long beard, nor one wrinkle amongst them. They turned the wood this way and that, but all sides looked alike. They scratched their dark hair, rubbed their smooth cheeks, walked quickly back and forth, but nothing helped. So a proclamation was sent throughout the kingdom, offering a fine reward to anyone with the answer. That night, the son served his father rice, salted with tears. "My boy," asked the father, "why do you cry?" "I fear we may be conquered," sighed the man, and told his father the problem. But his father was not worried. Instead, he laughed. "My son, you do need the old ones. The answer is easy." And he told him what to do. The next day, the man ran to the palace and called for a bowl of water. Then, in front of the king and the others, he took the wood and placed it in the bowl. Immediately, one side floated down, while the opposite side stayed up. "Sir," said the young man, "the part of the square which is higher in the water was also higher in the tree." The messenger bowed his head, accepting defeat. Everyone rejoiced until the messenger called for his two horses, which looked exactly alike. "Now for the second riddle," he said. "One of these horses is the mother, and one is her foal. Which is which?" Again, the king gathered his advisers. But perhaps their hair was too dark, their skin too soft. For whatever reason, no answer was found. A proclamation went forth once more, yet no one came forward. That night, the father heard of the second riddle. "Oh, my son," he said, "you do need more white hairs in the kingdom. These are simple matters." And he told him what to do. The next day the man ran with a wide grin to the court. "Great king," he said, "starve the horses for 3 days and then put out a carrot." Thus, several days later, A carrot was placed some distance from the hungry horses, and they were set free. Like the wind, one horse raced to the carrot and gulped it down. The other stayed back, watching. "You see," explained the man, "the horse which ran to eat is the foal, while the mother waited to make sure her son was fed." The messenger again bowed his head, agreeing, but then spoke. "There is yet still one challenge. Bring me a rope made of ashes." "A rope of ashes? A rope of vines, a straw rope, even a rope of rags could perhaps be made. But one of ashes? How could that be?" Great, great sorrow filled the kingdom, for no one knew what to do. But fortunately, the father again gave his help. At dawn in the palace, the son asked for a rope covered with oil. It was set aflame, and the fire neatly ate the rope, leaving only ashes behind. When the fire was finished, a rope of ash lay perfect upon the ground. "You have proven yourselves wise indeed," said the imperial messenger, "and you will have the peace which you deserve." After he left, drums and dances filled the air. Well pleased, the king offered the young man great riches. "I cannot accept, sir," said the man, "for it was my father who knew the answers."
"Your old father? But he should have died on the mountain," said the king.
"I could not leave him there, my king. I hid him instead, and thus he could help us," said the son, looking down. "But now you must punish us both." Silence filled the room as everyone waited for the king to speak. At last he did. "Your father's advice was wise. It saved the kingdom. He and the other elders know much, do they not, from their many years? We have been very foolish to send them away." And so from that day, the custom was stopped. Never again was an elder abandoned or taken away. Instead, they were given the respect and honor which they well deserved. And in return, they freely shared their wisdom with everyone in the land. Before our next story, let's take a proverb break. Proverbs are fun to think about. Sometimes they tell a tiny tale themselves. Here are a few Korean proverbs. Some may sound like proverbs you've heard, some may not. Maria will say each first in Korean, and then I will say it in English.
백지창도 맞들면 낫다.
Even a sheet of paper weighs less if four hands lift it.
작은 고추가 맵다.
Though small, pepper is hot.
산에 올라가야 봄을 잡는다.
Unless you go up the mountain, you cannot catch a tiger.
시작이 반이다.
To begin well is to be half done.
소 잃고 의양간 고친다.
Repair the cowshed after the cow is lost.
누더기 속에서 영웅이 난다.
Out of the rags comes a hero. Our last story has some strong pictures in it. To help you think about them, after the tale, we'll finish simply with a little more music from Maria and Jungju. 감사합니다. The Serpent's Revenge. 옛날 옛속에 Long, long ago, a woodcutter once wandered into a forest unknown and strange to him. As he tried to find his way out, he suddenly heard the cry of a bird, a cry full of terror, of fright. The kind woodcutter ran toward the sound and found a mother pheasant trying desperately to scare away a large white snake. The snake was slithering up a tree, moving steadily toward a nest of little birds. Again and again, the pheasant swooped down toward the snake, trying to drive her off. But the snake was not stopped by a mere bird. She just kept sliding closer and closer to the nest.
"Stop!" shouted the woodcutter, waving a stick.
Yet the snake did not even pause.
"Go away!" he cried.
But the snake kept climbing and climbing, and was now so close that she drew back, preparing to strike.
Then suddenly the man hit the snake hard on its head. She fell dead to the ground. The mother bird swooped down to comfort her young. Her cries were of joy and relief as she stroked and soothed them.
The woodcutter watched, pleased that he could help. Then he walked on, and the day passed, and the week, the month. Soon, several years had gone by, and he forgot all about the birds. But one night, he found himself again in that unknown part of the woods. It was dark and late. He was lost. He searched round for a place to shelter and finally found a warm light coming from a little hut. He knocked, and a pale woman, whiter than the moon, opened the door, saying softly, "Annyeonghaseyo." "Excuse me," he begged, "but I am lost and need rest. Might I stay the night in a corner of your home?"
"Please come in," she invited.
He sat down and she served him kimchi and rice on a low table. As he ate, he marveled at her grace and fine speech. He wondered what she was doing alone in the woods. He was about to ask when a great weariness overcame him, and he sank upon the floor, his eyes closed. Hours later, he awoke to find that he could not move his arms. They were pressed tightly against his side, as if they were held. And he felt something wet sliding back and forth across his cheek. Then he looked down and saw a huge white snake coiled all around him.
"Who are you?"
he asked. "You do not know me?" hissed the snake. "I am the spirit of the snake you killed some time ago. I have been waiting and waiting for you to kill you." The woodcutter suddenly remembered the mother pheasant.
But you were trying to kill tiny babies," he cried. "And I gave you a chance, a warning. Give me the same."
"I'm warning you now. You will be killed. Are you ready?"
"Oh, not now. Please, first let me go home and bid farewell to my family. Then I'll return," he promised.
No, I can wait no longer."
But the woodcutter kept on pleading and begging until at last the snake said,
"All right, I shall give you a chance. At the top of this mountain is a bell near an old temple. If that bell rings before dawn, I will spare your life."
The woodcutter had never been to the temple. It was dark. He was tired. Yet he had to try. He started to stand up, but the snake's coils only squeezed him more tightly.
"No," she said, "you don't understand. The bell must ring while you stay here."
Well, that was impossible. The woodcutter knew now that he would die. He said his prayers and prepared for the next world. It was a long and awful night as the snake slithered all over him, licking his cheek as if very, very hungry. At last, the light of dawn crept under the door, and the snake raised itself about to strike. Then suddenly, dong-a-dong, a bell sounded. The snake gave a hiss of rage and then slipped out the door, furious, robbed of her revenge. For some time, the woodcutter did not move, still full of fear. But when after a while the snake had not returned, he tried to move his arms and then slowly stood up, thinking, "Perhaps I dreamt it all. Perhaps there was no snake." "There is only one way to know," he decided. "I must find the bell and see for myself." So he stumbled up the mountain in the morning light, seeking the temple. Pushing through thorns and brush, he finally found it, and near it a big bronze bell. But the place was deserted, overgrown with weeds. A large log hung next to the bell, ready to strike it and make it sing. But on that old wood, he saw only dead worms, tired leaves. It had not been touched for many years. Then what hit the bell? What made it ring? He wondered. Slowly, his eyes fell to the side of the bell, and he saw blood. He looked down and saw bits of feather. And then he saw the broken body of a bird and recognized the mother pheasant. He knelt down beside the bird. His tears wrapped round her body as he thanked her again and again for giving her life to save his. But there was no answer in that blood-red dawn. There was only the silence of the old temple and the stillness of that warm heart.
The proceeding was a production of the Korea Society. For more information on our programs, please visit www.koreasociety.org.